And it is my duty, because this might be the inner chronicle of what we are. And we have to articulate ourselves, otherwise we would be cows in the field.
Welcome to Cows in the Field. I'm Justin.
And I'm Laura.
And today we're talking about Can't Hardly Wait, 1998 movie. Teen comedy, directed by Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont.
A creative partnership. They also did the movie Josie and the Pussycats. I think that's kind of it in terms of their major filmography.
So this movie stars Jennifer Love Hewitt as Amanda.
And Ethan Embry is Preston. Lauren Ambrose is Denise. And Seth Green is Kenny. I think those are probably those are the main ones. It also is starring everybody you've ever known from the 90s and early aughts.
Yeah, it is true.
That it's fun for that reason. We don't need to list it. We're not going to list it.
I know. It has so many 6 feet under people.
Yes. Yeah. It's the whole cast of 6 feet under, or at least from that generation.
Yeah.
No Hiram, but other than that.
Yeah. And currently this movie is streaming on Netflix, which is fun.
Yes. So if you want to revisit it with us, please go right ahead. Although I'll say please. I say go ahead and do it. Justin is less excited about it.
We'll get into this later. Let's first of all just figure out who the characters are, which one then you identify with, based on my calculation of what each of them can't hardly wait for. Great. So William the nerd can't hardly wait for revenge. I take it that's what he wants. He wants revenge against this jock guy who's sort of picked on him all college. Sorry, high school. There are a couple characters who I think can't hardly wait for college slash freedom slash they just want to like escape and live their true life, whatever that may be.
Okay.
So I think of the actually these two characters who never actually speak as related in this way. So I think Mike, our jock antagonist, and Denise, I think also is this person, right? She just wants to get out of here, right? Mm-hmm. She's just done with it. Now, of course, they have different attitudes towards, like, Denise is very dismissive of everything that's going on, and Mike takes it very seriously. But Mike also has his sights set on college. He dumps his girlfriend Amanda, you know, in anticipation of going off to college. Like, that's what he, you know, that's what he's got his sights set on. And I think Denise as well. She just can't abide anyone who she goes to high school with.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are those two characters. Then there's the characters that can't hardly wait for sex, which... You know, surprisingly, for a movie where you would have thought that would have been everyone, I really only thought there was one character who...
Just Kenny?
Just Kenny, who was Seth Green. Mm-hmm. And then I've got, for love, Preston. I think that's Preston, right?
Yeah.
He, I mean, a question mark on love, but I think he wants love. And then, funnily enough, I mean, these aren't main characters, but there are two characters who are linked to who I think can't hardly wait for... like a time when they can reflect back on this time, which is Vicky, played by Melissa Joan Hart. She's the one running around trying to get everyone to sign her yearbook. And then this guy who is only named Reminiscing Guy. And he's the guy who just is like, remember that time? And he's like constantly running around.
We mash up our food in seventh grade in our trays. Yeah.
Okay. So if that's the breakdown.
I'm not those two.
You know, of course, maybe you couldn't have hardly waited for something else. But what do you think?
I probably would be a mix of Denise and Ethan Embry, or Denise and Preston, if I'm going to use the character names. In terms of my orientation towards high school, I was definitely Denise in that I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to work really, really hard so that I can go to a good college and like leave this in the rear view. But I'm also was a hopeless romantic in high school. So I think that had a little bit of Preston in me too. But
yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I probably identified with the Ethan Embry character, as I said, and I think much to my detriment.
But should anyway. We say a little bit about who we were in high school?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So, go for it. You want to go first?
Okay. I should wonder if I should even use past tense when I say I was really uptight.
No, talk about it in past tense. It makes it sound like it's no longer the case.
All right. Well, that's what I'm questioning. I think I might be a little bit less uptight now than I was, but
I think your uptightness went in one of those double peak curves where it was like high and then it went low and then it got high again. That's what happened.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. At any rate, in high school, I was uptight. I was... a really hard worker. I was a mega nerd. I did not go to any parties like this. never been to a house party. Will never go to a house party.
Wait, my time has passed. Saying you never once went to a house party in high school?
No, never once. I think I went to a few summers in college. But yeah, in high school, zero house parties. The only thing that I went to were like sanctioned house parties, like when the parents were there, right. And it was like sponsored by, it was like we'd had these football games and then.
Sponsored by Corona Light.
Yeah, sponsored by Corona Light. Sponsored by like the school, you know, so oh. The brother school would have football games and then like the parents would throw parties after the football games. But like.
But who would go to those?
Anybody? I mean, everybody. Well, I went when I was in ninth grade and we didn't have a lot better to do in the ninth grade. You know, your parents would like drop you off and pick you up. It was super
and it was
lame.
At like 4 p.m. and you get picked up at 7.
It was after the football game on a Friday night. So it was like a 10 o'clock at night. But there was no drinking. So it wasn't really a house party. Yeah. so no, I've never been to a single house party. Isn't
why? That- why did you not go to a single house party? Did you have the opportunity?
I may have had opportunities early on. And then I was one of those. It was such a hard worker. Not like explicitly non-drinker. I never said the word straight edge, I don't think, but
I don't think, yeah. You know. That word was around for you.
It was around. Yeah. I didn't like it, but effectively I was like an aggressively sober, hardworking, freaked out person. There was a couple of things why, like reasons why I didn't party, but I mean, one was because I had pretty strict parents, and that doesn't stop everybody, but it stopped me because I'm a rule follower, and I was scared that we were going to get busted by the police and that I wouldn't get into college.
Do you really think that would happen? Like you, like you, your college application would be jeopardized by going to one party?
Listen, it's like the coronavirus thing. Like, do I think that if I walk 10 feet behind somebody and they cough, I might get a globule in my mouth? Like, probably not, but I'm not going to risk
it. You're not going to risk it. Yeah.
The stakes are so high. I had to get out.
Okay. I think basically I rebelled against everything that I could in high school, but I wasn't like a hardcore rebel. I just, you know, was tried to subvert every expectation that was put on me, which meant
I tried
that,
to fulfill every expectation that was put on me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we were the exact opposites.
I was like, how high do you want me to jump? And I will do it.
Yeah. Twice. I was like, why am I being asked to jump? You can't justify that. I'm not doing it. And I was never satisfied with the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, as a result, like I regret it really, because I think I just squandered 4 years of my life. I mean, I did a lot of interesting things in high school and I got to know lots of cool people and I'm still friends with many of them. You know, we talked about this in the last one. I did some pranking.
Mm-hmm. Some pranking.
And then towards the end of high school, I got really seriously into music. So that was when I was like I was just playing guitar constantly and being in bands and playing classical guitar and singing in the choir and then that kind of thing. So that I was taking that really seriously. Nowhere was I like, we were talking about this yesterday, like I don't even remember doing homework.
That's
like
crazy.
I don't even have any discrete memory of studying for a test or
I would make special binders in a, you know, in anticipation of a midterm or something like that, a large test, I would make a special test binder.
Okay. Yeah. And okay. So just, for you, it's, I guess, less important because you went to a private school. You had to wear a uniform.
Yeah. So I went to an all girls school. I wore a uniform. We had a brother school. So our high school dynamic, you know, it was not anything you see in a teen movie.
Yeah.
Ever.
So, but my high school experience was much more like this movie.
Yeah.
Because I went to house parties. I actually never drank, so that wasn't an issue. But you know, I was at the party and I was hanging out a lot and I went to public school, so we could just wear whatever we want, basically. Mm-hmm. And I wore mostly black. Well, my main fashion goal was to find the most borderline scary / offensive band shirt that I could find and wear that and see how much I could push the envelope as far as wearing, you know, like a shirt with like, you know, all kinds of weird metal, heavy metal, like font on it. And then like a dismembered body, like a, you know, a drawing.
What is heavy metal font? Just like font that looks like lightning?
More like the black metal font and death metal font is all like spidery and spindly. Anyway, so I like wear these shirts.
Okay, because I was like, how is font scary? And now you've really painted,
it's scary,
painted,
right?
You painted a picture for me.
It's like terrifying font.
Yeah.
And then so I would wear that. And I later learned like years and years later, I was talking to someone and they were like, yeah, like, I was deeply afraid of you in high school because they're like, all you do, you had long hair and you wore it in front of your face. I could never see your face. And you had all these like heavy metal shirts with like demons on them.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. Like I was intimidating in high school.
Yeah. We would have not dated in high school. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think like why Can't Hardly Wait is in my sort of stable. If I'm going to pick a couple of 90s, early 2000s teens movies, like why is it like that and not, you know, She's All That, or if I'm, you know, the darker ones like Cruel Intentions. I think people love those, and those don't resonate as much with me.
Like, what about like, can we name just a couple, just get a few more on the table?
Yeah, sure. 10 Things I Hate About You, which I do enjoy. Clueless, I think, is fantastic.
So I would say Clueless is the one for me. But what about like American Pie?
No. I'm never going to watch that movie again. You're just trying to list.
I was off the top of the dome.
Yeah. Drive Me Crazy was the Melissa Joan Hart vehicle. Mm. I'm trying to think. So there was all of this, and there's the suite of like Shakespeare ones, which we already named 10 Things I Hate About You. Oh, there was the Othello one. One of the silly ones that I like is I Get Over It, and that's the Midsummer Night Dream.
Okay, so of this list, but I mean, where would be the top? Because you said Clueless you liked.
I think Clueless is probably the best made of all of them. 10 Things I Hate About You, I remember being high, but I haven't seen it in a while. Right. For whatever reason, I don't circle back to that one as much. But I was trying to figure out why I circle back to this one as much. And I think it might be about regrets. Like, it might be about the fact that I am fascinated by what I don't know and that I have a little bit of jealousy for. This is always my defense about why I watch The Kardashians, which is the only reality TV I watch. And I love it unabashedly. And I think it's because I don't have a big family. Not even just that I have like one sibling, but we have a really small extended family. And I'm fascinated by the large family aspect of The Kardashians. The infighting, but also then how they all end up in a big cuddle puddle, like in the end. And like, I'm really fascinated by the closeness and largeness of their family. And similarly, I have never been to a house party. And I think I'm upset about it.
I see.
Deep in my soul.
So is it almost though, like anthropological? Like you're like, I want to see what I missed out on and how I can kind of.
A little bit. It's like an alternate reality. Yeah. What I could have, like, if I let myself have any fun at all, like, I could have got to one of those.
Yeah. They really sucked.
Okay.
They were all wastes of time. I mean, maybe they weren't to the people who were getting wasted.
Fun, you mean?
I mean, I don't know. Is that the only way to have fun at a house party is to be wasted? I feel like
I don't know. I'm thinking that a lot of people had fun at house parties. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's even, so I was thinking about this in terms of my missing out on these on house parties or just like parties in general that involved alcohol by the end of my high school career. There was even something kind of like this, you know, of this event. It was a post-prom party that actually had something kind of momentous happen in that, like, you know, a relationship formed during that post-prom party that still exists today.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you maybe you were going to say that ended at the end of the party. I was like, wow.
Like Denise and Kenny.
Amazing.
No, I missed the whole thing. I wasn't there. I didn't see the beginning or the end of the relationship.
Oh, that's great.
No, I mean, a couple got together during that party. And I was not aware that the party was going to happen. I was not invited because I was really lame. Also, I skipped that prom. So that's kind of on me. But yeah, you know, like I think I do have this sort of fascination or feeling of a little bit of FOMO. And maybe that's part of why
that's interesting.
Crazy or that's part of why Can't Hardly Wait is something that means something to me.
I wonder if that's why I'm so fascinated by special ops movies. I wonder if it's the same thing. I'm just like, man.
It's like an alternate reality.
Yeah, alternate reality where I'm like, I'm like a special, I'm like going in I'm going into the compound.
Yep.
With my brothers in arms.
Right. Yeah. So far from who you are. And the, yeah, and like, yeah, going to a house party is so far from who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Well,
that,
all right.
That was so one theory.
That's one theory. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is that I just think I had a raging crush on Ethan Embry. And
I see. So you were like, you were completing this, the cycle.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, it is a bit of a thing, I think, for the, like, 10 Things I Hate About You also had this as a main character, a sensitive, sweet guy who's pining after the pretty girl.
Right, the incel.
The incel, right. Because some movies are, like, She's All That, for example, the protagonist, the male protagonist, at least, is a popular guy. Yeah. Often it is from the popular person's perspective.
I guess, yeah.
Not always, but anyway, I digress. But the point is I had a love for that kind of archetype, and I just wanted to hug Preston, and yeah. he was like, it makes me feel warm and gooey whenever he addresses the camera with his silly nonsense. The other thing is that I think, you know, it's basically, there was a thing in the 90s, late 90s and early 2000s with teen movies where they'd have like a musical element, like in Clueless where Mighty Mighty Boss Tones are on, or Save Ferris and 10 Things I Hate About You. It usually would happen at prom or at some sort of like crazy club where, why are they 18 and going to a club? Nobody knows. Whatever. But this movie is like a music video from start to finish.
Yeah, it's a lot of music.
And it almost never stops playing music.
Yep.
And in the beginning, before things slow down and they have a few more serious scenes, the editing is very fast and it's cut like a music video. When they're introducing all the characters, they're stitching the scenes together in a way where, you know, you see William talking to his, they're called like a X-File 1 and X-File 2, I think are the character names, of the two minions of William's. But he has security cameras outside of his like scientific lair. And you see them exiting his scientific lair, and then it's security camera footage. And then that cuts to security camera footage in the convenience store where you see Kenny. Mm. Like it's all sort of stitched together, and the dialogue also pieces together in that way too. Mm-hmm. And it starts off really fun and snappy. Mm-hmm. And it's colorful and bright in a way that a music video from the 90s, late 90s feels too.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think it's a lot of fun. The other thing that I like about it is that I think Clueless is really great, and it does it well, but sometimes it's a lot to try and cram Shakespeare into a teen setting, and a lot of those movies are really like plotty. And this movie has almost no plot whatsoever, and it's a lot simpler, and it's in the same mold as the one night model of like American Graffiti or Dazed and Confused. I think when we were reading the reviews were the two ones that everybody was like, this is a crappy version of those two movies.
Yeah.
But it's simple. It's too simple in places because, like I said, people aren't archetypes or stereotypes in this movie. But I do appreciate that it's a little bit more, it's less Baroque than trying to put a four-act Shakespeare play into a high school setting.
Okay, so tell me more about your love or whatever of this movie. Because if you don't keep going on how much you love this movie, I'm going to get into why I don't like the movie.
Oh, no. I don't think when people asked us to review or to talk about 90s teen drama, they wanted us to just be like, "This, your faves are problematic."
Yeah, no, I just have a few points.
I think we have to address them. For sure. All of the movies, I think, from this time period, if you go back, you're going to find some stuff that's going to make you cringe, for sure. Yep. But I think what you're going to talk about is that there's like a sort of, there's a poison at the center of this movie.
I think there is. I mean, there's some stuff that they could have cut and very easily. For instance, some offhand uses of racial and homophobic slurs that are played for laughs, completely casually, and could have been cut like, without doing anything to the movie very easily.
Yep. Yeah. In case you haven't seen this recently.
We don't need to remind people this.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no need. We don't need to. It's just stupid. They just don't need to be in the movie. It serves no purpose. And it's there because like the 90s in that respect sucked. Like people were stupid. And I mean, definitely. I mean, my high school was like that. People used gay as just to talk about things that they didn't like. Right. And, you know, nobody thought about it really, even though there were many people, there were several openly gay people in my high school. And we just didn't even think about this. And like, it was just like it presupposed that like that was weird and objectionable and maybe not necessarily morally bad, but just like whatever, unusual enough to be shit on or whatever. And so this movie's picking up that cultural thread. But yeah, the real thing is, one other thing is like the underwritten all the characters are, but in particular the female characters. In particular, the character of Amanda, who played by Jennifer Love Hewitt, who basically
she's completely empty.
She has no character to her. She also has no agency in this movie. We'll get back to that.
And I mean, the most we get about her as a person is, besides the fact that she's Mike's girlfriend, is that her yearbook quote is Jewel. So if I would almost say it, if you were asking which character I'd identify with. Yeah. Maybe there's a little hint of Amanda in me because of my deep love for Jewel. But that's all you get about Amanda.
Yeah. But it is this idea that, like, because he's a nice guy, he's done everything he needs to do. He deserves the woman to love him. And, you know, regardless of what she wants, it's not, he never once, like, is like, I wonder if she's interested in me. He's just like, I'm obsessed with her. I have decided that I've read the tea leaves and all the signs, and they're telling me that we're fated to be together.
Right.
And he's never like, he doesn't even know who she is. Like, he has no idea who she is. He's never spoken to her once. She has no idea who he is.
Yeah. She has to look him up in the yearbook to figure out who he is when she gets his letter.
He's just obsessed from afar in this way that, you know, is probably common, but is also just unfortunate that that is portrayed as healthy, and not only just healthy, but like admirable behavior, right? And it's the only way they can make it seem admirable is by basically contrasting him with every other man in this movie who is portrayed as basically a caveman.
Yeah. No, so after Amanda and Mike have another re-breakup scene in the party. And as she's walking away, there's a series of men that just come up and proposition her. Men are dogs in this movie. It's awful. I feel really bad for Amanda. She can't even get out of that house without 10 people being like, let's have sex.
Yeah.
And then she yells at Preston because she thinks he's another one of those guys. And, you know, he is one of those guys, yeah, too. The only difference is that he's more verbose and, you know.
He's not asking her for sex. He's asking her for love. But like,
he's asking her
but
for
it's
love,
still
yeah.
all done without any like. Without the like this the giving any thought to the view that she might want to have some choice in this, and like the fact that she doesn't know who she is a pretty good sign she's not interested in him, right? Because presumably she's seen him and they've sat next to each other in class, and you know, so probably she's not attracted to this guy, right? Otherwise they would have found some way to have a conversation. And yet he thinks like if he talks to her once, and then that's what happens, right? And I feel like that it's just a toxic idea that like be pushing in your movie that is seen by millions of teenagers, myself included, who then come to think like this is how love works.
Right. Yeah. I think he says at some point, like, if you give me, in one of his monologues, if you just give me a chance, one chance.
Yeah.
That's
that idea. And it,
that you deserve a chance.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, you don't deserve a chance at anything. Like,
nope.
Like, screw off. If you talk to her, then maybe she'll talk to you about it. You know, it's like, she didn't owe him a date or anything.
No. But at the time when I watched this movie in high school, I thought he was really romantic. And I thought it'd be maybe really nice to get a long letter from somebody about how much they loved me and thought I looked, you know, thought I was so special and all that. But in fact, that would be super creepy to receive.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to, do we have any other segments?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we could talk. We've kind of like talked around this, but really, what I was trying to think about what this movie is about, if that's what our project is here on this podcast, finding themes, is that high school sucks and it brings out the worst side of you, and everybody is the worst person, a version of themselves in high school because they're all so desperately trying to fit in. or to, you know, for whatever, try and orient themselves to whatever in-group they're trying to be a part of. But even though we all agree high school sucks, we cannot shake it, and we're still obsessed with it. Mm. That was what I was thinking. And because mostly because of those end titles. So at the very end of the movie, probably one of my least favorite parts of this movie is the very end. They have like a freeze frame of various characters after the next morning after the party. And they have freeze frames on the characters, and they tell you what happened to these characters in the future. This is pretty common for a lot of movies, but they're really over the top. The nerd character, William, goes to Harvard and founds a software company and becomes a millionaire. Oh, and he's married to a supermodel. And Mike, meanwhile, the jock character, is a drunk who works at a car wash, right?
I don't know.
He got fired because of the sexually explicit pictures that were taken at the evening of this party.
I mean, here's the question.
Yes.
Is that supposed to be like self-reflectively over the top? Like, is it like we know the standard genre tropes and we're trying to like just like be absurdist about this?
I think throwing in the supermodel wife is probably a little bit over the top. The point remains that I feel like the writers of this movie feel like they need to, that they, like, they have a chip on their shoulder,
yeah,
or they know that we as the audience have a chip on our shoulder, and they feel compelled to do a bit of wish fulfillment through this movie. There's even a moment in which Mike kind of has a redeeming moment in that he,
yep,
when they are in the police, yep, station, he covers for William and does a nice thing. And then he then doesn't acknowledge William when he's with his friends the next, yep, day. But he does a nice thing. He's not a total piece of shit. And yet we still can't let, you know, Mike off the hook entirely. He has to be a drunk that works at the car wash in 20 years. Because they, either the writers feel or they, that personally, or they think that the audience feels that like the Mikes have to get theirs.
Yeah. So can I talk about this really quickly? So,
yeah.
So I feel like there's a better movie here, which has no protagonist and no antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very close to that movie. Because,
yep,
Mike is, my interpretation of Mike is he's a gay man who wants to live his true life. He's getting excited for college when maybe he's going to start experimenting, and he dumps his girlfriend and just wants to hang out with his pals, right? He just wants to hang out with his boys. He's trying to convince them all to dump their girlfriends this, yeah, entire movie.
Yeah.
And
but they got tickets to Pearl Jam.
Whatever. They want to hang out with their girlfriends because they're straight and he's not, right? And he can't, like, he's as burdened by his status and, you know, place in the social hierarchy of the school as the nerd is burdened with the, you know, the chain of being a nerd, right? And like, be, you know, so Mike doesn't want to have to, here's a interpretation that I don't think the movie goes this way, but this is, to my mind, the way I would want it to go, is Mike doesn't want to have to beat up the nerd. He's a nice guy at the core, right? But like, because he's so popular and because he doesn't want to be found out to be gay, he has to code up as masculine and as hypersexualized and as hyper heterosexual and all that. And he has to beat up on the nerds and have the hot girlfriend, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he just wants to get out of that. He wants to get out of this situation as much as everyone else does. And that would be, I think, a much more interesting movie. And then that's a movie where Mike doesn't, you know, have a terrible life. That's a movie where at the end, Mike gets to come out and get his, live his happy out life.
That is a beautiful story.
Yeah, that's the story. And I think similarly for Denise. I mean, Denise presumably could be gay as well.
You think
and
everybody's gay in this movie.
Look, there are no gay characters in this movie, which suggests that like 20% or whatever are gay. So I'm just going through the likely suspects. Denise,
four,
probably gay, and she doesn't want to have sex with this. I mean, she's like, okay, I guess, you know, that whatever. What's his name?
Kenny. Special K.
Right. Special K. And right, but at least then you have this like parallelism between every single character, because of course Kenny is doing exactly the same thing Mike is doing, right? Mm-hmm. He's gonna put on all these airs about how, you know, he's gotta dressed like a gangster and stuff, but we learn he's a rich kid, right? Like he's significantly more wealthy than Denise. And, you know, and he ultimately wants reprieve from the role he's been saddled with, right? Maybe he wants to just, maybe he just wants to be like a more of a nerd or something, and more of a, like a banker, or maybe he wants to like be into sports or something, right? Like, and he can't because he's got to like play out this like archetype of being a skateboard rebel or whatever. And similarly, Denise, you know, maybe she wants to go to Lilith Fair. I don't know. I'm just sorry. That's offensive. Sorry. But, you know, Denise wants to
just... This is the part of the podcast where Justin just spouts off a bunch of stereotypes.
Denise just wants to, like, you know, she does not want to be having sex with men. And she wants to go to college and, like, be herself and, like, whatever. And, like, I don't know. I feel like then there's no antagonist. There's no protagonist. Everyone just is burdened by the same crap that you were talking about high school being the worst time, where you're just like stuck in the role you were put in fourth grade, and now you have to like play that out in your...
And I think too, regarding those sort of final notes, you know, they are satirical. I think you're right about that, but they still didn't need to be there, because I think the Trip McNeely scene does it all for you.
Yeah.
If this is a story about how, like, you know, anybody who didn't have a great time in high school told themselves that college was going to be great, and the people who were the top of the mountain in high school were going to like get knocked down a couple pegs in college, right? That's what we told ourselves, us nerds. I don't know what you told. I don't know if that was something you told yourself. You were always like, ugh, if you peaked in high school, you know, that's not great for you. You know, I'm just starting. I'm just a late bloomer. But the Trip McNeely scene, he tells Mike that he was hot shit in high school and now he's not. And that's kind of all you need. Is this when I tell my Trip McNeely story?
If you want.
I had a Trip McNeely encounter. I had an encounter with a Trip, who my sister called Trip McNeely, but he was the worst. And I just want to, if anybody's listening, I just want to give a cautionary tale for men named Trip. I think they're dangerous.
You're destined for drama with Trip.
Yeah. Also, I made a lot of mistakes, and I'm going to tell this story admitting my mistakes, and then maybe other women will not make the same mistakes. I met him on a plane. I don't think you should meet people on transportation where you're trapped together. I think that's no good. He sat next to me on a plane. Hmm. His name is Trip. His last name is not McNeely, but his name is Trip. And he was a year older than me, but he had gone to my brother's school. My brother high school, and we had friends in common. So I therefore thought that he was somehow like vetted. That's bullshit. That's also wrong. So just as a cautionary tale, I gave him my number and got a weird vibe off of him through that. We were coming home for break, and he kept sort of like badgering me, and I was just getting a weird vibe off of him. So I told him that we could go to coffee the night before I went back to college so that he wouldn't try to ask me to see me again. A second time, he only got that one shot, and we were like gonna go to coffee. He offered to pick me up. That was another mistake. Go and meet them at the place so you have your own vehicle, because then I was trapped with him. So we get there at the Starbucks and it's closed because it's the holidays and the hours are different. He says, never mind. He knows where we can go. And he says he's gonna take me to his house. His house is empty. And what I mean by empty is that there's no furniture in it, because his house is being sold currently. So it's like, oh, it like has electricity and stuff for being shown.
I mean, I should just say, when Laura said sold, she put it in quotes. Because there was a chainsaw, right?
There was no chainsaw, but there was a hot tub that was on already, and a bag in the kitchen, the empty kitchen, with a set of clothes for me to change into so that I can get in said hot tub with him. So this was the plan the whole time. He already had all that shit ready to go. He was never planning to like just go get coffee with me.
It's uncomfortable.
Isn't that horrible? The only thing that I could think was that luckily this house was two blocks from my own house. So I was like, if he brought out the chainsaw, I could run home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't like hurting people's feelings. So
you
didn't run away.
You went in the hot tub?
I dangled my feet in. I refused to change.
Good for you.
But I dangled my feet in, and then I just told him over and over and over that I needed to go home until he drove me home. But I made so many mistakes.
But Trent
McNeely.
You think of it like you made mistakes, but like, let's talk about this from Trent McNeely's perspective.
He knows what he did.
This guy sounds
like a psychopath.
Yeah. I mean, this guy sounds a little bit like Preston. He's just like, if I buy her all these clothes and have the hot tub running, like, she can't refuse.
He's
right?
Like, oh, it's fate.
It's fate. Yeah.
Ooh.
We met on an airplane. That's how everyone meets these days. Do you have anything else you want to go over?
No, I think it's a fun movie. I'm not apologizing.
You're not apologizing for it. That's fine. It's fine. It's an okay movie. I like the soundtrack a lot. I was digging on the soundtrack.
Yeah, you were rocking to it earlier today.
I was rocking out. Well, I wanted to get back in the groove.
Yeah, you know? I just wrote down a few. Smash Mouth, Eve 6, Third Eye Blind, a lot of Third Eye Blind. Mm. D-Light, Run DMC, Guns N' Roses, Blink 182, Missy Elliott, Sublime, Boys to Men, in a very important scene, Dire Straits, and obviously Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
No, that is a cool, rockin' soundtrack.
It's a cool soundtrack, and it's also just like so rooted in the time that, you know, it sort of brings me back and reminds me of whatever, good and bad, for good and bad, like about that time.
Yeah, I think that's another, I mentioned the music video-ness of it, but I think the music specifically is also another part that I enjoy about that movie. I mean, when I had just one CD, did you have like a CD player in your car that you could put multiple CDs in, or was it just one at a time? Yeah, one at a time for me too. The Third Eye Blind album was in there a lot.
Yeah. That was a good, yeah. It's I enjoyed that album. I mean, that album, for the poppiness of the music, the lyrics are real downers.
Yes. Yeah. But when you're a teenager, you're feeling a lot of angst, right?
It was like, you want to have lyrics about heroin and
stuff. That Dashboard Confessional was the other one that was on heavy rotation. Fair enough, yeah, so, yeah, you know, either I needed to scream into the void or I needed to cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I would put on some Fiona Apple.
Yeah, no, I feel like this was when you peaked in terms of like your enjoyment of music, right? Like this is like, it's Jewel, Fiona, this is like your time.
Yes,
For me, the time was probably 2004 or so to 2008. That was like when I was like the most tapped into music. And like when I go back, I'm like, oh yeah, I get into that groove with the music that was coming out then.
I think you and I are getting different things out of music because you never pay attention to the lyrics and I'm all about the lyrics because I'm maybe tone deaf and don't appreciate music.
Yeah, I don't even hear the lyrics most of the time. I like 90% of the time, they could just be like talking like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that was all about that for me. So the connection with music in high school was more about like my hormones and the sheer amount of feelings that I had and that I would like write the lyrics down as like poetry in my journal. You think I have a lot of feelings now? You don't even know.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Trent McNeely.
Trent McNeely.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess we're going to have to be split on this one. One thumb up.
One
thumb up. One thumb down. I'm not putting two thumbs up on this. I have one of the two thumbs and it's
firmly planted. Oh, I understand. We each have down. One thumb.
You didn't That's how it works with Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, okay. I was going to say,
Siskel gets one thumb. Ebert gets, it's not four thumbs. It's like, what do you mean? Like Siskel's like, we're going to give this one three thumbs up. I give it two, you give it one. You've never heard that, right?
100% honest with you. I did not put that together until just now.
You thought it was possible for a movie to get four thumbs up.
It turned into a thing later when people would say, I give it two thumbs up, just as them as a person.
Yeah, like so, they were embodying both Siskel and Ebert.
I didn't realize that.
Siskel, I mean, it is true that both Siskel and Ebert have two thumbs. But yes. They only use one thumb in going up
Thank
and down.
Thank you for clarifying that they're both anatomically correct.
Yeah, they both have two thumbs. It's true. But, you know, but yeah. Because you went. It's so funny. Like, Siskel's like, we get this before. Four thumbs. I don't know why I find that so funny. Four thumbs.
Oh my God. All right. Oh no.
Oh man. I don't get in that weird like thing where I'm laughing like uncontrollably very often, but I almost put me over.
Can I don't know if we can like pop this in at a more appropriate time, but Siskel and Ebert reminded me of a quote from one of their reviews that I need to just read to you real quick.
Is this
quick.
From the two Siskel and Ebert?
Yeah, I don't know which thumb it is from. I don't know whose thumb wrote it. Now I'm just snorting. It's from Ebert. All right. It made me really angry. So, all right. So he's picking on the fact that this movie doesn't have the best dialogue sometimes, and it's not always presented super great. So he's saying, he quotes Amanda, "If I'm not Mike's girlfriend, who am I? Nobody knows me as anything else. I don't even know me as anything else." End quote. He says, real poignancy there. My own rule of thumb in high school and ever after is that if a woman has little of interest to say, she is likely over a span of time to have less and less to say until she will drive you mad. That is true, even though she may, as Amanda does, have an impressive figure.
Wow. Holy. That is bad times, Raj.
Yep. It made me. Now, he goes on to explain that he thinks Denise is like a really good character, or at least in comparison to Amanda.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's in praise of Denise.
True, but like.
But yeah, yikes.
You don't need to put it in those terms. Oh,
mm-mm.
Boy, Raj.
Mm-mm. And he had to just make a quick little comment about her boobs.
Well, yeah. But also, it seemed like he was commenting on like his marriage, maybe, right? Because he's like, you know, she doesn't have anything to say on the first date. She's not going to have anything interesting to say
10
on
years
the
later.
Yeah, exactly. When you're married and you have four kids, so
yeah,
he's like, don't marry Amanda. Bad times.
Yeah,
that's real bad time. I'm glad you found that. How did was that just on the Roger Ebert review?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, they didn't redact it.
Did he? So I guess he gave it one thumb down.
Yeah, I don't know. He gave it one half of a thumb. He severed his thumb.
Oh no! So he did the old severed thumb.
No, actually, it's 1.5 stars. He did do a severed.
He did a severed thumb. Oh no, Raj. He couldn't take it.
It's only 1.5 thumb for Denise. The other, but like he had to chop the top half off for Amanda.
Well, he know what that. Yeah, exactly. Oh, Raj, that's so bad. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, bitches be shopping. Okay.
All right. I think that we got to go. That's a good note to end on. And yeah, thank you for listening. This has been Can't Hardly Wait. Our, you know, a movie finally we disagree about. And we'll have many more of these movies that we disagree about.
Yeah. Let us know if you like the disagreeing. More.
Yeah. If you like the disagreeing, you know, the reviews help.
Wait, review, and subscribe.
No,
can't say it.
It doesn't matter. We don't care. We're doing this just for the hell of it. Yeah. Okay. I think we're gonna call it.
Thank you.
If I abandoned this project, I would be a man without dreams. It's not only my dreams. My belief is that all these dreams are yours as well. And the only distinction between me and you is that I can articulate them.